We welcome you back to this edition of the Jacob Bunn Show, and we are joined now by Wes Rucker. He is the Tennessee volunteer beat writer for the Chattanooga Times Free Press and the host of the Wes Rucker Show on ESPN 1180 AM in Knoxville. Wes, thanks for being with us.
No problem. Happy to help.
Last week, it was reported that Tennessee is being investigated by the NCAA for a possible violation regarding actions taken by former head football coach Lane Kiffin. It has also been widely speculated that Tennessee will receive a letter of inquiry from the NCAA soon. What can you tell us at this hour about the state of the investigation and the letter?
Well, it's tough to get anything nailed down for sure because, the NCAA kind of moves at the speed it wants to when it wants to move there. That's kind of how those investigations go. They've been very thorough. They've had a little resistance trying to get a hold of Lane Kiffin and Ed Orgeron and that crew over there at Southern Cal. But I imagine that after they get those interviews done and speak a couple more times with Bryce Brown and his parents, they'll have some sort of a ruling on this. But it's definitely, from what I understand, it's a whole lot of little things that might make one big thing, but they're kind of working on that. The people at UT don't necessarily expect anything major to come from this, but depending on what the NCAA finds, it could very well be a big deal. So we kind of know a little bit more day-to-day on this, but as of now, I don't know enough to say exactly how much trouble they're going to be in or whether the NCAA would rather try to find some punishment for Lane without punishing UT too heavily, which is what some of the people at UT want, but I don't know how realistic that is because those infractions that he caused at UT, well, he was at UT then and he was hired by UT, so that's kind of where they are now.
So you believe Lane Kiffin is heavily involved?
Yeah, obviously, because, compliance and a lot of those issues weren't a huge deal for the most part during the Fulmer era. There were a few incidents, obviously. I mean, every program is going to have those. But Lane Kiffin brought a little bit more high profile to those mistakes, and he's also sort of rubbed his nose at the NCAA a few times. And I know very well the people in Indianapolis don't like that. So if they can find anything on this, they will find it.
Sure. Wes, in January, Derek Dooley was hired as the 22nd head football coach at Tennessee, though games have yet to be played. Give us your grade of Derek Dooley over the first 7 months he's been there, given the off-the-field obstacles with which he has dealt.
I think the early returns are fairly positive, but this is certainly a rebuilding project. It's like I told people, this is not your older brother's Tennessee Vols this year. They're not going to look as good in pads as they had in the past, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
They do have some SEC-level talent, obviously, and I think their starting lineups on both sides, for the most part, are pretty okay, but there's very little depth. They've got depth at defensive end, at a little bit at linebacker, and in the punting and kicking game. But beyond that, there's just not a tremendous amount of depth. Obviously, there's a couple of new quarterbacks in junior college, signing Matt Sims. That'd be the son of Phil Sims and brother of
right.
Chris Sims. And then Tyler Bray, the 6'6", 6'7" freshman from California. So there's a lot of rebuilding here. There's a lot of new faces. But in terms of Dooley being the face of the program, I mean, he sort of walks, talks, and acts like an SEC coach. Now we just have to see how good of an SEC coach he'll be.
Right. Looking to 2010, the Vols returned 5 starters on offense and 6 on defense. And, of course, there are question marks on both sides of the football. What do you expect from Tennessee this year?
It's honestly surprising to hear that they're returning 5 starters on offense because they don't return any up front. The quarterback's new and the tailback's new. So, there's 5 new starters on the offensive line, which is going to be a tremendous challenge for them. They didn't have really any depth at defensive tackle aside from Montori Hughes and Marlon Walls, who are a couple of pretty good players, but there were just 2 of them. And now there's just 1 because Marlon Walls ruptured his Achilles and is out for the season. So, they might be playing a couple of 255, 260-pound guys at defensive tackle. They're going to be playing a lot of freshmen, a lot of redshirt freshmen on both sides of the ball. And I think that, honestly, it's going to be hard for them to go 6-6 and go to a bowl game. You look at the schedule and you look at the talent Tennessee has and the depth Tennessee has, and, I see 4 wins in there pretty easily with UT Martin and UAB and Memphis and Vanderbilt. And then Kentucky's kind of a toss-up. They've won that game 25 years in a row, so it sounds funny to say that game's a toss-up, and it is in Knoxville.
Right.
But I don't know about that game. And then obviously Masoli going to Ole Miss changes the complexion of that game. So I think it's going to be all they can do to get to 6-6.
Yeah, talking about the schedule, they have home games this year against the two previous national champions, Florida and Alabama, but they have road contests with the likes of Georgia and LSU. How easy would it be for Tennessee not to make it to a bowl this year?
Oh, I think on some days I leave the practice field thinking there's a better chance they won't go to a bowl game than they will.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not an indication of Dooley's inability to coach. You have to look at this being the third head coach in 3 years. In between the Fulmer and Kiffin eras, there were 10 or 11 guys that left the program in between. You've had three or four high-profile exits since Dooley came to Knoxville. So there's been a lot of turnover there. It's the third system in 3 years, new coaches, new players, and they're having to get used to each other in a hurry. So especially when you look at the depth situation, they're a couple of injuries away from me saying with almost certainty they won't go to a bowl game. But right. as the situation is now, if they stay healthy, I'd say it's almost a coin flip.
What is your, as far as position, what's your surprise this year from Tennessee to the upside?
I would say that tailback Torn Poole is a guy that not a lot of people know a lot about. He's from kind of the Georgia-South Carolina border over there. Was a pretty highly rated recruit, but not a super huge recruit. And he has waited for 3 years now, or 3 or 4 years, for an opportunity to play. He's been behind a couple of pretty darn talented guys who are in the NFL now and making good money in Arian Foster and Montario Hardesty, and then obviously Bryce Brown a little bit last year. So it's been a struggle for him to get on the field, but when he gets on the field in scrimmages, if he goes to scrimmage without breaking off 140-yard run, it's kind of a surprise.
Right.
So he's a guy that you probably need to know if you're following Tennessee this year. And then I would say tight end Luke Stocker will be collecting NFL paychecks this time next year.
Sure.
He's a very good player. And then I would say at the wide receiver position, a whole lot of young talent. Derrick Rogers and Justin Hunter are a couple of 6'3", 6'4", type kids, freshmen, along with 6'6", Matt Milton. A really good young wide receiver core. And I think you might hear something from those guys before the end of the season.
Right. Timetables are always dangerous. But how far down the road do you see it being before Tennessee is back to that national prominence that they held just a few years ago?
Well, I'll know a lot more this year, honestly, as soon as I see him play a little bit. They've put the foundation down. Now, Dooley has recruited a lot of guys who aren't necessarily 4- and 5-star talents, but guys who have really, really high GPAs, had a lot of Duke, Vanderbilt, Stanford type of offers. They've had a couple of 4-stars in that mix, but not a lot. And it's a little different recruiting style from Tennessee. Dooley seems like he's building for the long haul. He's teaching these players, spending a whole lot of time teaching them life lessons, like, you know, interest on a credit card, what does that mean?
Sure.
You sign a lease for an apartment, what does that mean? He seems to be trying to build men as much as football players. So I sort of like what I'm seeing in terms of the groundwork, but he signed a top 10 recruiting class last year. This year is going to be a pretty decent recruiting class, but I'd say competing for SEC championships maybe 3 years away, maybe 2-3 years away.
Well, we will certainly look forward to that. Wes, you've been very generous to give us some of your time, and I know you're deep into coverage of 2-a-days there in Knoxville, so we'll let you run, but this has certainly been a pleasure.
Anytime you need help.
Thank you very much. Wes Rucker of the Chattanooga Times Free Press and also the host of the Wes Rucker Show on ESPN 1180 in Knoxville. Ryan Haney has wandered into the studio here, the program director here at WJOX in Birmingham. Ryan, appreciate you sitting down with us.
Hello, Jacob. How are you?
Doing well. You also host a show on Saturdays, Pat, with Pat Smith.
Is that what that is?
You know, I want to start with a subject that seemed to capture the attention of Nick Saban and Urban Meyer lately, and that being the issue of agents tampering with college athletes. What do you feel is the problem and the solution to the problem?
The problem is this: you can ban agents all you want to, but they're going to find churches, they're going to find apartment complexes, they're going to show up at the O'Charlies where these players are eating, they're going to go to the gyms that they're at. They're going to find them. The rub here is in 39 states it's illegal. It's legislated for these agents to stay away. I think the real solution to this problem, it's easy because fans don't want to think that their team's players would do anything wrong, or they're always looking, you know, we as fans are always looking to place blame other places. I think the real answer, Jacob, is to not deter the agents. It's to deter the players. Mm-hmm. And the way you deter the players is if you are, let's just say, at the University of Alabama, and I'm the agent, and you take money from me, you move on to the NFL, you're suspended from the NFL, where it almost carries over. That's the only way to make these players accountable.
Mm-hmm.
They're really in a no-lose situation. Yeah, it looks bad initially, and it's a PR hit, but if these guys are going to the NFL the next year, does it really matter? Yep. The universities are the ones left to pick up the pieces.
That's true. Nick Saban told NFL scouts they were no longer welcome at his practice. Urban Meyer, closed practice to everyone. Do you think that's a good move?
Well, they're just trying to send a message. No, not really. I think it's really kind of silly, truthfully. I mean, I think they're trying to send a message, and it's a game going on now that some of these major head coaches are having with the NFL. And we'll see what happens. Again, Saban said these guys can come back once the season starts up, but you can't ultimately rob these players.
Right.
That will be used against you in recruiting.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, Saban's a master at recruiting and pulling out all the tricks. He's not about to really kick agents out for good, and then every team he recruits against, the LSUs and the Texas and the Auburns of the world, go say, why would you want to play for Nick Saban, Jacob? You know, you are a NFL-caliber player, and he's not going to let agents on campus. And all that's going to do, or they're not let him into practice, and all that's going to do is hurt your draft status. So it could affect them negatively, and I haven't heard a lot of talk about that.
This year, looking toward the 2010 SEC season, the SEC has won the last four national championships. What do you think the major storylines are going to be?
I wish I knew. I'm kind of in the school of I think Alabama has a very good chance to repeat. I think it's probably, unless something drastic changes, going to be my pick to happen again this year, although history would say that it's not going to happen.
Right.
And I think it's more of the way Alabama dominated really Florida and Texas at the end of the year, and maybe the way some of the other teams didn't blossom, if you will, there at the very end of the year. I think Virginia Tech's a team to watch. If they can get past Boise, watch out. I think they will get past Boise. Everybody's talking about Florida State, in the ACC, but I really think this could be Virginia Tech's year in the ACC.
Well, that's where I was going to go next, the national picture. I heard you on a show this afternoon on the Paul Feinbaum Radio Network with Pat Smith, and you said there were two teams that you thought would be dark horses. Mm-hmm. Would you like to tell us who and why?
I'll say Iowa and Nebraska. Come this time next year, we're going to be talking about how great it's going to be for Iowa and Nebraska to have a slugfest, pound your face in, running the football match in the Big Ten, but they're still in different conferences this year. I think Iowa, because all the attention's on Ohio State and Wisconsin, of the three schedules of those teams have, Iowa's actually got the easier road. They've got all their defensive line coming back. Yeah, they're replacing two guys on the offensive line, but there's no one better as far as a head coach to coaching offensive line than Kirk Ferentz.
Sure.
And so that's a no-brainer. If Ricky Stanzi plays up to his capabilities, I think Iowa's a team to watch out for. Nebraska, here's why. You've got Texas and Oklahoma. One of them's going to knock the other one out. And so if Nebraska, they'll be favored in every game they play, except for maybe Texas. When Texas comes in October, I think it's October 9th, October 10th, something like that. When they come into Lincoln, if they can knock off the Longhorns, they're in the driver's seat for the Big 12. And that, by that point, they would probably be a top five team. But again, they've got the easier road schedule-wise as opposed to Texas and Oklahoma. Both those teams, they're top 10, top 11 teams, but they're considered the third best teams in each of their conference.
Right. WJOX has recently become the home of Crimson Tide Athletics, and as you can hear all of Alabama's games on that station this year. And talking about that schedule, as much has been made about six SEC opponents with bye weeks before Alabama. What do you make of that?
Look at Auburn's schedule. I think Auburn has seven or eight opponents to play, like a Division I AA opponent before.
Sure.
Is there really any difference other than the
right.
fact a team can get injured? I mean, it is what it is. If Alabama wins all the games, does it matter? That's really more fan speak. I mean, Auburn plays 11 straight games before their bye week. I mean, you can make that argument for a lot of teams. Is six a lot? Absolutely, it's a lot. But I also credit the other universities for having it set up like that. You can be critical of it and be critical of the SEC all you want, but why don't we give these other schools and universities credit for playing? That's good. But you can't fault Tennessee or LSU or Auburn or anybody else. And if you're an Alabama fan, I'm sure it drives you crazy, but you have to look at it as it's a compliment
respect,
to your team.
Yeah.
It's a respect thing. Mm-hmm. So I applaud the teams for doing it.
Going back just for a moment to the agent issue, and I go back and forth whether to raise this question or not. But what all the schools involved? The most famous incident, of course, is the party in Miami involving ACC and SEC schools. It seems that all conferences have been sought after, except for the likes of the Big Ten, the Big East. Do you sense any conspiracy there?
No, it's just because their football sucks. No, I'm just kidding, of course. After I just said I think Iowa's a dark horse team to watch.
Right.
No, I think it's just circumstance of who happened to be there. I don't think there's any kind of conspiracy there.
Okay.
Not at all.
All right. Well, Ryan Haney, you've been very generous also to give us a few minutes of your time, and you can hear him on Saturdays, Jocks Game Day with Pat Smith on WJOX in Birmingham, and occasionally filling in for Paul Feinbaum on the Paul Feinbaum Radio Network. Thanks, Ryan.
All right. Thanks, Jacob.
And that's going to do it for this edition of the Jacob Bunn Show. Thank you, David Sears, once again for helping us out. And we will be back next week as we roll on 3 weeks away from college football season beginning.